Good morning and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Our topic for today is a tiny museum in Chugiak called the Little Lithuanian Museum and Library. It opened in 2021 and is curated by an Alaskan, Zvia Worthington, who fled Lithuania as a child in 1944, just as the Soviet Army drove out Nazi troops and reclaimed the Baltic country for the USSR. What is the story behind this museum here in Alaska? Who is Zvia Worthington and why did she open this museum? I was drawn to this topic not just out of curiosity about something so unique in Chugiak, but also because the world's attention is drawn right now to Ukraine and Russia's efforts to make Ukraine a part of an old, great Russian empire. The more I learned about Lithuania, the more I saw parallels to today's events in Ukraine. Back in the day, Russia claimed Lithuania as its territory, but Lithuanians had a different idea. They have been resisting occupation and declaring their democratic independence since 1918. They were the first to declare their independence from the USSR and modeled the process for other Soviet bloc countries. With Zvia's help, we'll learn a bit about her own story and also about the history of Lithuania and why she was moved to create a museum, a tribute to her country of origin, even as she has become an Alaskan. To view the Lithuanian Museum's website, do visit alaskapublic.org/hometown. And if you'd like to join us in this conversation today, we'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call here in Anchorage at 550-8433. Statewide, it's 1-888-353-5752. And we'll be checking our email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. If you're of Eastern European descent and have familiarity with the way boundaries have changed over the years in Eastern Europe, you may have something to say about the state of Lithuania today, the Baltic states, and even what's going on in Ukraine, discomfort in Poland, the situation in Belarus. So it's a very interesting window into really something that we are seeing in our news headlines today, but through a tiny museum in here in Chugiak that celebrates the Lithuanian tradition. So I want to introduce my guest, Zvia Worthington. Hello, Zvia, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Hello, Kathleen. I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to talk about Lithuania, land of my birth.
That's right. And right off the bat, you said this is D-Day. Would you explain what that means and why it's important to you?
Well, I visited the sites of the invasion in Normandy, and it was such a huge and wonderful and momentous effort, and of course very deadly, but I'm very mindful of the fact that it is D-Day, and for me it does connect. Would you like to hear more about where Lithuania is?
That would be wonderful, because I know, our focus has not always been so clear on Eastern Europe, and also the boundaries have changed so often, the maps have changed so often. So tell us where Lithuania is.
Okay. Well, Lithuania is a Baltic state. It is the southernmost of the three Baltic states, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia. It's on the Baltic Sea, which is across from Norway and Sweden. If you can picture that peninsula of Norway and Sweden, it's across the sea. It happens to be the geographic center of Europe, if you consider UK as part of Europe. It's not a very big country. It's about the size of Illinois. And for me, it's almost heart-shaped. And being the geographic center of Europe, I think of it as the heart of Europe in a way.
Yeah, that's okay. So that is really great. Does it border Russia or only Belarus?
It borders Belarus, and it borders Poland also. And one of the interesting facts is that on the edge of the Baltic Sea, there's a little place called Kaliningrad, which is a Russian enclave with a huge military base with nuclear missiles, and it's a threat to Lithuania, because if the gap should be closed between Kaliningrad and Belarus, which borders Lithuania, if Russia should take a jolt, that once again Lithuania and the rest of the Baltics would be isolated. So that's one of the issues in the present day. It's called the Suwalki Corridor. Mm-hmm. And in the past, Lithuania was, you mentioned changing borders. In the Middle Ages, it was huge. It was the dominant power in Europe. It went from the Baltic Sea to the Black Sea to within 100 miles of Moscow. And it was very, very powerful at that time. In fact, one historian has an interesting, more than one historian has an interesting insight on that. And he wrote, Lithuania's expansion from the Baltic Sea to the Black Sea prevented Tatar and Mongol invasions into Western Europe, thus allowing for the proliferation of the Renaissance. And that's, I think, a tangible argument. But after the Middle Ages, eventually Lithuania and Poland divided the territory, and it shrank to its present-day size, which has remained for quite a while, in spite of the fact of successive Russian occupations.
And just to be clear, Lithuania is in NATO, and it's in the EU, and is a member of various organizations that link it to Western Europe, right?
Oh, yes, yes. It's a very, very active member of both organizations. And I've listened to so many Zooms and sessions about the present-day situation. And one of the big ironies is that before the war in Ukraine, I think it was President Macron of France who said that NATO was brain dead. But in fact, because of what's happening in Ukraine and that part of the world, NATO is stronger than ever. And we all know that Sweden and Finland now are wanting to join NATO. So this is an irony of an unintended consequence, I think.
Right, right. So we're going to talk more about the history. And thank you for placing Lithuania in our mind's eye here so we know and the relevance and the significance in today's news events. Svaya, I was so moved. I did get to visit your museum months ago and saw there the remnants of your family's journey. And so for those who don't know your story, could you talk a little bit about where you were in Lithuania and what happened to your own family? And then bring us up to date to how you got to Alaska. So it's kind of a sweeping story, but told from I guess you were five when you left?
Actually, I was not even two.
Oh, okay.
I was a toddler. And it was 1944 that we left Lithuania. We had to leave because the Soviets, the Russians, were occupying Lithuania. And in 1941, my grandfather, aunt, and grandmother had been arrested and exiled to Siberia. And in fact, on the arrest warrant were all the family's names. And so now that the Russians were reoccupying Lithuania, my family knew they were in great danger of arrest and exile, deportation to Siberia. And this is true of many, many people. It is not unique to my family. Literally hundreds of thousands of people left the Baltics, Lithuania at that time, trying to stay ahead of the Russian front. So in 1944, in August, we left. My parents actually thought they would be back in a couple of weeks. They buried some precious items. My mother didn't even take her precious diary, which she gave to a neighbor and said, keep this for me until I get back. But we were a group of about 20 people. My mother was pregnant with her third child. My father was 36, and he was guiding us, and we were just trying to stay ahead of the Russian front. In fact, in our travels through Poland, we had passed, not knowing it, within 10 miles of Hitler's command base, Wolf's Lair, where an attempt was made to assassinate him. I'm sure people have heard about that.
Mm-hmm.
So we were refugees. This was in 44 through 45, and the war was coming to an end, but nobody really knew that. Eventually, my brother was born in Czechoslovakia in January while we were refugees. And at that time, we were called DPs, displaced persons, and it was just a stream of refugees, many, many people. We ended up in Germany. It was now after the war and in Nuremberg. And my mother said this was the first time she actually felt safe because we found a bombed-out administrative building in which the restrooms were still intact. And she said we could sleep in the restrooms, and she knew that we were finally safe because we had experience strafing, hiding under bridges and culverts. I don't remember any of that.
Right.
I remember being in a huge room with lots of families, and the families were separated by blankets, and it was kind of calm and quiet, people quietly talking. And my first memory really is of somebody playing the harmonica. Mm. And years later, I remembered the song. I recognized it. It was "If I Had the Fears of an If I Had the Wings of an Angel." That song has always been very, very precious to me.
Wow, wow. I just have to say, these are like they call to mind images of what we've seen in Ukraine today. You know, families walking, standing at a train station, hoping to get on a train with, you know, whatever they can carry, and so it's just so reminiscent of what we are seeing today. And again, if people don't know, Russia had occupied Lithuania before the war. Then the Germans pushed them out, and then as I guess U.S. allies, they took it back. But the Lithuanian people were not happy about that, right?
When Stalin and Hitler signed the Molotov-Ribbentrop secret pact, Lithuania fell into the territory of Stalin's Soviet Russia. Of course, Hitler broke the pact and invaded Lithuania, and that's when the first German occupation took place, when they pushed the Russians out, and when the Russians left at that time, they took as many people as they could with them. About 20,000 Lithuanians were arrested, among them my grandfather and grandmother and aunt.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, when Operation Barbarossa failed and the Russians were pushing the Germans out, that's when we left. And Lithuania, it was never involved in the war. It was just a country that was in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Between Germany and Russia.
Yeah.
And after World War One, there was a period of chaos when the world order was repositioning, and Lithuania took that opportunity to declare independence, and it was successful. And for 20 years of independence, from 1918 to 1938, Lithuania blossomed in every aspect, from aviation to the arts. It was a wonderful time, but it didn't last. Because Russia reoccupied Lithuania and claimed it. But when, in 1991, when independence was restored, Lithuania calls it the restoration of independence and claims it again. And freedom is the most valuable and cherished, I want to say, thing to Lithuanians.
Mm-hmm.
Value freedom above everything else for themselves and for other people as well. Lithuania has never been an aggressor nation. It was huge during the Middle Ages, but that was a different world set.
Yeah, yes, right. Let me just, if people are listening and they're wondering, what is this conversation about? I just want to let them know we're talking about the Little Lithuanian Museum and Library, which is located in Chugiak, Alaska, and is that's a very curious thing right there. So we found the founder and the curator, Svaya Worthington, and she's our guest today. And we've been just kind of putting Lithuania in context historically and geographically in Eastern Europe and talking a little bit about Svaya's own family story. They were refugees in 1944 during World War II, near the end of World War II. Svaya, just bring us up to date to how Alaska came into your life.
Well, in 1949, we were finally able to emigrate to the United States, and there were very, very strict quotas. So we were lucky, and we were so lucky to survive as a family intact. Many, many families, of course, did not survive those years of refugee wandering around. So we left in 1949, went to Germany, where my father had a sponsor. My father had been a farm manager in Lithuania. He was a championship sugar beet farmer of Lithuania. He knew what he was doing. So he worked on a farm for a while, which he loved. But he had an uncle in Cicero, Illinois, because my father was actually born in Cicero. So we went to Cicero, and I grew up in that area in a little town called Lyons, Illinois, which is a suburb, which I'd love. My mother loved it, too, because there are many forest preserves around the town, and it reminded her of Lithuania because they lived in the country on an estate on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lovely childhood. I have no complaints about my childhood. And I went to the University of Illinois and studied the teaching of English, and then to the University of New Mexico to pursue my graduate degree, where I studied literature and linguistics. And that was when I became aware of how unique the Lithuanian language is. It was my first language, by the way. I spoke it at home. But Lithuania is one of the oldest spoken languages existing. It hasn't changed in over 1,000 years, and it has similarities to Sanskrit. And in fact, linguists study Lithuanian because of that fact. It helps them to unravel Sanskrit. Some of the words are literally the same, like who in Lithuania is kas, and who in Sanskrit is kas. Anyway, other words. Oh, so after graduating from the UNM, at that time in New Mexico, I met the man who became my husband, and he had a summer job being a ranger in McKinley Park. I had never imagined, being a little city girl from Illinois, that I would end up in Denali. Well, now it's Denali Park, Alaska.
Uh-huh.
Wonderful experience for me, and I spent 2 summers there. I returned to New Mexico, and I could never forget Alaska. I would dream about it and think, oh, it can't be that beautiful. But, and it took 8 years, but we moved back to Alaska with 4 children, and I've been here ever since, from 1975, and it is my home, and I am so grateful to live here. I love it more and more all the time.
Oh, I can imagine. And tell us how the museum came into being. It's only about 2021, right? But was it a long passion of yours to do this, or how did you know? And how did you? I've seen it. It's a little yellow house right on your property there in Chugiak, separate building. But tell us, you know, the genesis of the museum.
Thank you, Kathleen, for mentioning my museum. I love my little museum. Actually, I did not have this vision for a very long time. A few years ago, it came to mind when I was realizing how many objects I had that were either from Lithuania, that I had for my travels. And then when my parents died, they left me all their things. When my aunties died, and I had literally a room full of these things that were all very precious to me. I thought I would put them in storage, but I thought they're too pretty to put in storage. They're too meaningful. So that's when the idea came to me that I want to display these things and share them with other people and explain something about Lithuania and its culture and its values, its history, because every object has a connection with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the idea came about, and it was the year of COVID 2020, and so, you know, we couldn't go out much, we couldn't connect much, so I worked on my museum, and that way it worked out very well for me.
And I think you told me that the building itself was something you saw that was for sale. It might have been maybe a beauty parlor or something like that historically, and it was for sale, and you bought it and moved it to your property, right?
That's correct, exactly. And it wasn't easy because the building was near the Alaska Zoo.
Oh.
And is far away from there. But I feel like I had so much help from not only other people, but other spiritual forces in making this all come together for me. I'm very, very grateful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And appreciative of the fact that it worked.
I want to, we'll talk more about what people can see in the museum and some of the stories about the objects in the museum. But I wanted to also mention to our audience that you are the consul, the honorary consul for Lithuania in Alaska since 2013. Is that right, Svaja?
Yes.
And is that something you applied for, or how did that come to be, and what are the duties?
It came completely unexpectedly. My son in California, who is a businessman, said that he had contacts from some Lithuanians who had visited his company, and one of them was going to Alaska, to Anchorage, to a transportation conference, and he asked my son, do you know anybody in that area? And because he was coming from Lithuania, and my son said, well, yes, my parents live there. My son contacted me and said, would you help Simonas when he comes to Anchorage, introduce him to the city and Alaska? And I said, oh, sure, I would love to. And so I did, and we had a small reception for him with the other members of the Lithuanian community, which is very small. in here in Alaska, and not very active, but we're here. And so when he got back to Washington, D.C., he was attached there with a diplomatic corps. He wrote and asked me if I would like to be honorary consul of Lithuania. And I told him just to be asked was an incredible honor. And of course, I would apply. So that's how it came about.
Oh, very interesting. Well, Sfaya, we're going to take a tiny break right now. We'll be coming back to talk more about the museum. But you are listening to Hometown Alaska, and I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
Listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. For more information about this episode, visit us online at alaskapublic.org.
The conversations you hear on Hometown Alaska are focused on the needs and voices of Alaskans, and the generosity of Alaskans brings them to you. Join your neighbors and become a member of your public radio station today.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and we've been speaking with Sfaya Worthington, who is the founder and curator of a tiny museum in Chugiak dedicated to the history of Lithuania, both its, you know, political history, her family history, the arts and culture of Lithuania. And in this segment, we're going to talk a little bit more about what's in the museum. I do want to alert our listeners that we're going to have another guest joining us in later in the show, Mary Kancewick, who is of Lithuanian descent, lives here in Alaska, and is a poet and has worked as an attorney. And she's just going to weigh in a little bit on the museum and Lithuanian history and even her reasons for, as a Lithuanian, settling in Alaska. So we'll have another guest later in the show, Mary Kancewick. But back to Sfaya. Welcome back, Sfaya. Hope you're doing well.
Oh, yes, I'm fine.
Good, good. So let's talk a little bit more about what's in the museum. I believe I saw like a leather suitcase. These were the things that were actually taken with your family as you were walking away from your town. But there's lots of things in there. There's, you know, historical references. There's cultural references. I remember, and I think if people go to your website, they can see these images of beautiful textiles that are in clothing. So I want to just talk about what's in the museum. You began with your family collection, but how have you added to the museum, and what things would you like to highlight from the museum?
Okay. Well, one thing that's happening is I keep adding exhibits to my museum. Not that I'm looking for it, but I come across connections. And the latest thing that I'm adding is something about it's Napoleon's campaign in 1812. I know it doesn't relate that much to the present day, but he went through Lithuania trying to invade Russia and spent quite a bit of time in Lithuania, which I didn't know. In fact, in Lithuania is where he decided, yes, I'm going to invade Russia in Vilnius. So the exhibits are growing. But right now what I have maps to situate the country in terms of where it is in the world. I have displays about a very important battle called the Battle of Tannenberg, where Lithuania and Poland defeated the Teutonic Knights, who were after the Crusades, were trying to impose Christianity on all of Europe. But that wasn't all they were trying to do. Europe was converted to Christianity without them, but they were after power and territory, so they were decisively defeated by the Lithuanian Grand Duke Vytautas. That's one unique fact about Lithuania. Another unique fact that I mentioned in my museum is Lithuanians were the last pagans in Europe to convert to Christianity. They were already converting by the 1200s to Christianity, but they held on as long as they could to their pagan tradition. traditions, which actually are very beautiful and based in nature, and Lithuanians still observe them. The solstice celebration is one of the biggest, but they are very devout Christians as well, 90% of the country being Catholic. There are very beautiful cathedrals in Vilnius and other areas of Lithuania in the Baroque style. They're pastel colored and gorgeous. And all very much inhabited, although, I mean, used, because during the Soviet years, all of the churches were closed. They were turned into warehouses or places to store things, or one of them was turned into a museum of atheism, which is, I think, typical Russian style. But they're back in use, and the people flock to them. I have lots of amber. Amber is the stone of Lithuania, lots of jewelry, and the significance of amber to Lithuania is that it's used to protect people. When soldiers go into battle, it was used for spiritual protection, women in childbirth. And in the modern day, there are teething necklaces made of amber for babies because it's supposed to help in the development of teeth. So I have amber. I have images of churches. Basketball is very important to Lithuania.
Oh, I wanted you to tell that story. Go ahead.
They call it the second religion. They started playing in the 1930s, and they just love it. And I think I'm not a great follower of basketball. I think people have heard of some of the basketball players from Lithuania who are not only very tall, but also have incredible athletic ability. And one of my fellow tennis players asked me the other day, he said, I know they're tall, but where do they get their athleticism? And I said, maybe it's from dancing, because Lithuanians love to dance, folk dancing, men and women. Lithuanians are hard workers, and they also really love to have fun. They're very resilient. In spite of the many tragic things that have happened in Lithuania with successive Russian occupations and suppression, they're very resilient, and they come back smiling and just happy to be free. I have exhibits about basketball. In 1992, Lithuania played the U.S. for the gold medal in basketball, but this was right after the collapse of the Soviet Empire, and they had very, very few financial resources. They didn't even have team uniforms. And the Grateful Dead heard about this team that is going to the Olympics, and they're really, really good, and they can hardly afford to buy uniforms. The Lithuanian team. So the Grateful Dead here Jerry Garcia wrote a very big check to the team, and they came up with a tie-dye T-shirt that features a skeleton making a basket, and it became famous and the must-have item from the 92 Olympics. And Lithuania did not win. The U.S. won the gold medal. But many people were actually rooting for Lithuania, and they were definitely the underdog. But the next team they had to play were the Russian team, and Lithuania did beat the Russian team. So that was the victory that really counted, and it's a very significant one. And then they went on to win in successive Olympics to win two more bronze medals. They're great athletes. I have a section on that. Lithuanians are also great adventurers. They do things all over the world. In 1933, there were two very famous aviators who flew from New York to Lithuania, Darius and Girėnas, across the Atlantic Ocean. And this was in the Lindbergh year, so this was a historical flight. They did make it, but they crashed on reaching Poland and did not survive. I have a little display about that. I have a display about the women of Lithuania, because Lithuania is a matriarchal society, and this goes back to the pagan times. There is a ritual staff that was excavated from 2400 BC, and the head of this ritual staff is a she-moose, and this typifies the matriarchal element of Lithuanian culture way back when, and even some of the other artifacts that are being excavated are goddesses, not male, but female goddesses. And there have been historically very strong Lithuanian women who not only achieved things, but were also very well-loved. So I have a display on the women of Lithuania, weavings, which are done by both men and women, but women primarily, lots of linen. Lithuania is a land of linen, and if you ever go there, you'll want to buy some, not only clothing, but all kinds of other things. It's very, very beautiful and all handmade.
By the way, if folks want to comment or ask Svaya a question about Lithuania, give us a call at 550-8433, or we'll watch the email at hometownatalaskapublic.org and try to share your questions on the air. Svaya, I'm trying to think. One of the things I wanted to do in the second segment of the show, in addition to just learning what people could see at your museum, I wanted to drill down a little bit more on the spirit of the Lithuanian people. I was blown away, frankly, by how long they have embraced democracy. And, 1918, I think I saw a reference to their constitution and the U.S. Constitution in something I read. I may not be able to pull that out. But, here we were. Oh, yes, here, U.S. Constitution and Lithuanians are linked. Anyway, they adopted their constitution in 1791, in Lithuania, during the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, trying to save the state. So anyway, it was drafted in relation to a copy of the United States Constitution. It is regarded as the world's second oldest codified national governmental constitution after the U.S. Constitution. I mean, it's just interesting. A different part of the world, different things going on, and yet people trying to craft a document that could help them live the way they want to live. But could we talk a little bit more about why you think, we see it in the Ukrainians, we see it in President Zelensky. I mean, they are going to fight for democracy. The Lithuanians, have democracy now, but they had to fight for it for a very long time. What do you think that's about? Do you think it comes from, why? Maybe it's that time between 1918 and 1938 when they had democracy and they flourished so strongly that made them want to preserve it. What do you think?
Yes, and the things Lithuanians love most are their country, their culture, their history, and it means everything to them. That's what they want to preserve. And the interwar period was a very wonderful time for Lithuania, but the Soviets occupied it for 50 years, and it was severely, severely suppressed. And earlier, too, during the Soviet occupations, which had happened in earlier years, the language was forbidden. Books would not be printed in Lithuania. Lithuanian was not taught. And yet the language survived because Lithuanians are very determined. You could call them stubborn, but that's a part of their resistance element. They cherish democracy and freedom so much that they will resist it to the death. And during the Soviet occupation, there were partisans that were called Forest Brothers and Sisters, and there were women in the partisans who were resisting the Soviet occupation, but they were all killed, every last one of them, and I think the total number is 35,000 who were killed. But in the darker part of my museum, the darker history, I would call, is what happened in World War II, with the occupation, with the deportations to Siberia. There's a map on the wall that shows all the areas to which Lithuanians were deported, and many of them died. It's estimated over 200,000. And one of the very sad fact about what happened in Lithuania during the occupation, why Lithuanians have so much empathy for Ukraine, because they know what will happen to Ukraine if it is occupied by Russia. In the middle of Vilnius is a huge building called, it was the Halls of Justice. When the Soviet Union occupied Lithuania, it turned the Halls of Justice into the KGB headquarters. And in that building, they arrested Lithuanians of all kinds and tortured them in unspeakable ways. And over 200,000 died in that museum. In the crypts of that building, which was the KGB building. But today, the walls of the museum on the outside, the bottom layer, has plaques commemorating all those who were killed there. And mostly mostly men in their 20s. They were young. They were fighting for Lithuania's freedom, and they were all victims of Soviet oppression. So Lithuania knows what will happen if the Russians succeed in occupying Ukraine, and they are doing everything they can to help. And the president of Lithuania, Gitanas Nausėda, is a very good friend of President Zelensky. And in one presentation, I heard him. I heard him say this. He said, every time I speak with President Zelensky, he said, we are very good friends. He tells me, well, Gitanas, this may be the last time we speak. And the president said to President Zelensky, well, tell me, what can we do to help you? How can we help you? And Zelensky said to him, be our voice in the world. I think that's a very powerful message, and I think the United States is doing that, and many people are in Alaska. I know there have been events commemorating Ukraine.
You know, Zvi, I want to jump in here. We've got a caller who has a question. It's actually calling from Florida. Peter, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. You know, I was just going to say, a lot of people probably think, oh, I don't know anyone who's Lithuanian. But actually, I know because I grew up in New York, and a good friend of the family, when I asked him, like, where did your parents come from? He said, well, my grandparents came from Lithuania. See, I didn't know him as being Lithuanian, but it's kind of like that nationality is kind of, you know, hidden by them saying, you know, they're Jewish New Yorkers.
Right.
Anyway. But the other question I heard recently that Lithuanian is the oldest language spoken.
Peter, we touched on that a little bit. Yes. Svaya, do you want to jump in and talk a little bit about that? It's related to Sanskrit. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's believed to be one of the most conservative languages that is still spoken, meaning it hasn't changed in over... In 1,000 years, it has changed very little. And that's partly because it was suppressed so much, so that in the countryside, people spoke Lithuania. In the cities, they did not. They spoke Polish or maybe Russian. But the countryside, the grannies in the country, the villages, they kept the language alive. And to this day, it is one of the oldest spoken languages. And its similarities to Sanskrit are so strong. Like the word for fire in Lithuania is ugnis. In Sanskrit, it's agnis. The word for God in Lithuanian is devas. In Sanskrit, it's devas. And the word for death is mirtis, and it's the same thing in Sanskrit. So there are many just incredible similarities. And yes, I'm very proud of that fact. It is one of the oldest, purest spoken languages existing today.
You know, this is my own ignorance, but Sanskrit comes from where? What part of the globe?
India,
okay.
Indo-European. It is actually the mother of all our modern languages. It's the first language. So all of our Indo-European languages come from Sanskrit. So this is why Lithuanian is one of the roots.
Very good, very good. Anyway, I did cut you off there. I'm sorry, I just wanted to get that caller's question in. But we were talking about support for Ukraine coming from, you know, Lithuania being the voice to the world. And I just wanted to, we opened with D-Day, right? We opened the recognizing that this was D-Day. And Svaya, you sent me an article today about what's going on in Ukraine. I guess you must get some news directly from Ukraine. But what I wanted to cite from that article was that the president of Lithuania drew parallels between Russia's aggression in Ukraine and the situation before World War II, when some countries agreed to the partition of Czechoslovakia to appease Nazi Germany. And the president says, it's a woman, she says, unfortunately, Europe has not learned from its mistakes. So I just wanted to share that because it was, again, contemporizes the situation, Lithuania's view of what's going on. And you were talking about it just before we took that call. I don't know, anything else to add about that? I imagine you're following the news very carefully from a Lithuanian perspective.
Yes. I just want to collect you on one small thing.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
The quote was from the ex-president of Lithuania, who was a woman, and she was president for two terms. Another example of the strong women of Lithuania. But I'm so glad you mentioned that quote. But I wonder if you would permit me to read a poem. I have to say I'm a teacher of English and literature, and poetry sometimes is the most powerful language of all. And this poem was written by a Lithuanian woman in the 1960s when Lithuania was still occupied by Russia. And she lived through that. And she describes the very building I mentioned, the one that the halls of justice that were turned into the KGB headquarters for torturing and murder.
You know, Sofia, I want you to read it. I'm just curious, how long is it?
15 lines.
Oh, yes. Let's go ahead and hear that poem then. Go ahead.
Because this makes me think of Ukraine. This is what will happen to Ukraine if Russia prevails. It's called November. A memorial plaque for those who were shot by the big corner building at the street's crossing. Melted red candles and a wreath of frozen, dusty asters. I hasten my steps, but somehow want to return and stand there and lick from my lips the sun and wind. Here lie the shadows of the shot, like a huge high barricade, the crumbling town a specter through the fog, like an X-ray photo, rustlings of dried vines, snatches of Chopin waltzes, and a feverish silence distances the arrest and the interrogations, throngs of numb passers-by. The cemeteries are on the maps, glances brood, and here, of a different flavor, taste the clouds, water, and food. So she describes the atmosphere of the oppression and suppression and the death that comes. Mm.
Well, thank you for that, Sofia. We do need to take a tiny break right now. And as I said earlier, we're going to bring on another guest, Mary Katzwick. And so we'll be right back. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you. Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. And if you're just joining us, we're on with Sofia Worthington, who has founded and curated a museum in Chugiak dedicated to the history and culture of Lithuania. And I do want to point out, we have received an email from a listener, B, who says she's listening to the program and she has visited the museum and found it very valuable and really appreciates the chance to hear about the museum on the radio. So again, I guess you could say this could be a review from someone who's been to the museum and found it worthy of the visit. And so we'll make sure before the show is over to let you know how to visit this museum. Sofia, you doing okay? I'm going to bring on Mary now.
Yes.
I'd like to welcome Mary Kantsiewicz. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Sofia. I wanted to tell everyone how much I appreciate your evolving exhibits. And I'm excited to know that you have one on Napoleon's campaign. I remember sort of researching that when I realized that what was the Lithuanian tort was actually the Napoleon tort. The layered cake with the wafer thin layers in between. And a lot of time, food shows the history. So Lithuania kind of adopted from that time. From that 1812 Russian campaign when Napoleon socialized with the high society in Vilnius and Kaunas. That's when the Lithuanian tort, the Napoleon tort, came into the cuisine.
Well, that's a very fun bit of culinary history. That is great. I want to tell our listeners a little bit more about you, Mary, if I may. I understand you're a poet. You write as Marka. Is that the right way to say that, Mary?
Anyway is okay. My father changed our Lithuanian name when he was a young man in order to improve his chances at getting a job on the south side of Chicago.
Very interesting.
And I always hated that.
Yes.
So I just took the first three letters of my first name and the first two letters of my last name, kind of all I could stand, and made it my nom de plume.
So, okay. And so you grew up in Chicago. After graduating from the University of Chicago Law School in 1980, you came to Alaska for a poetry conference and never left. You say you were drawn to work on indigenous issues here because of the themes of self-determination, of sovereignty, and of living off the land that were part of your own ethnic history, as were preservation of language and culture. And of course, we've been talking on the show a lot about all of this, a lot on language, the ancientness of the Lithuanian language dating back to Sanskrit. Mary is the author of the poetry collection Behooved, published by the University of Alaska Press in 2019. It was noted for its thought-provoking work. Among her current projects is a reflective work of hybrid genres about the political self-immolation of 19-year-old Roma Skalanta in the spring of 1972. This is in Lithuania. Which act sparked a brief Kauna spring in Lithuania? So, Svaja and I were sort of talking about the nature and character of the Lithuanian people and their embracing of democracy and their strong resistance through decades of oppression. So I learned that you had focused on this young man in Lithuania. And could you tell us a little bit about that? So it's kind of a specific example of that kind of resistance. Could you tell us a little bit more about him?
Well, I was 17 in the south side of Chicago, living in the diaspora, when my father, I was working on my prom dress, my junior prom dress, and he walked into the room and started being very emotional about how this young man in Lithuania, this age mate, had self-immolated for freedom, and how he was a hero, and how I should look upon him as a martyr and someone to emulate. Well, that was kind of confusing at that point, thinking about suicide as something to be emulated. And it has haunted me ever since. And this year is the 50th anniversary of the 19-year-old's self-immolation on Freedom Avenue in front of the musical theater where Lithuania was made a Soviet Socialist Republic. And I have been making a push to create something that explores the various aspects of his act. I think one of the things that, one of the points that I hope will thread through this is that, the Soviets diagnosed him immediately as crazy. You know, they were known for their abuse of psychiatry, and if you any sign of dissidence was grounds for being diagnosed as schizophrenic. It was crazy to show any dissent. And then later, when things opened up, when under Brezhnev, there was this loosening, et cetera, a new panel of psychiatrists indicated that this young man was not crazy. And I think that's a false dichotomy, because you can be, mental illness does not necessarily preclude mental strength. And depression can be very rational. And depression and an altruistic political suicide are not mutually exclusive. There was a really great quote. Kalanta was inspired by the act of a young man in the Czech Republic, Jan Polak, who self-immolated in a very equivalent way. And the Czech psychiatrist who was interviewed at the fall of communism said, "I don't approve of it, but I understand it. I have a deep understanding that it was his own fight in a situation when the entire nation had already lost its will to fight. And as we can see, its significance is great all over the world. So it wasn't hopeless or pointless. But from a human standpoint, I would have been happier if he had emigrated and worked at a radio station broadcasting news. Like you, Kathleen."
Right. That's, I mean, it's a difficult topic. suicide for political reasons, to make a political statement, is difficult to talk about. I saw once I learned of this, I read that there were others in Lithuania that did it. And as you point out, Mary, people around the world also have done it. I want to bring Svaya in here to just maybe talk a little bit to us about that spirit of resistance. And
I'm here, Kathleen, and I'm so glad you brought this subtopic up again. Your image on your website of the man standing in front of the tank, I do hope people have seen it because it's so relevant. The Tiananmen massacre happened 33 years ago. Just a few days ago was the anniversary of it. And I think hundreds of people were killed in the Tiananmen massacre. I think people remember that image of the lone man standing in front of the tanks. Well, in Lithuania, it wasn't hundreds people. I think 14 people died, but the tanks literally mowed them down. 13 of them, all but one, died from that. And that's the resistance that Lithuanians have to oppression and their love of freedom and their desire to restore democracy, which they did. The images from when the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991 just show happy people smiling, reclaiming their freedom, not bitter, but happy to be alive, to be able to join the world, because during the Soviet years, they were isolated. They couldn't participate in any kind of world travel or commerce or participation. They were cut off, isolated. So when I first traveled to Lithuania in 1999, I expected to find bitterness after 50 years of brutal occupation and suppression, but I didn't. People were just happy. They were happy to be free. They were looking forward. They were not looking backward. They were glad to have the opportunity to join world commerce. And I think, Kathleen, once you use the word advanced with reference to Lithuania, and it is advanced in that way because it has joined world affairs with a gusto, and I'm very proud of it for that reason.
Mm-hmm. That picture, I do. If you haven't seen it, it's on alaskapublic.org/hometown. It's the lead image for the promotion for today's show, and it's very dramatic. And of course, it brought Tiananmen Square to my mind right away. And this was they were called the January event. It was the January event. I think it was right when the Soviet Union was sort of starting to crumble. Right, Svaya?
Yes, it was. In 1989, it started to crumble. But in 1991, when that incident happened, Gorbachev was trying to say, no, you will not be free. We are going to bring the tanks in, and you are going to be under our rule. Well, it didn't happen. The people flooded to the television towers where the tanks were rolling in. And as I mentioned, 14 of them died, and they are buried in the cemetery in Vilnius, which is reserved for heroes. No, you can't be buried there unless you have a heroic status, and all of those people are buried there. And in some ways, because Lithuania resisted Gorbachev and the Soviet Union so fiercely, and Gorbachev did back down and withdraw the tanks, I think in some ways Lithuania was kind of a catalyst for the continuing collapse of the Soviet Empire. And that's how I view it. Mm-hmm. And I know that Putin has said that the collapse of the Soviet Empire was one of the greatest tragedies of history, and he wants it back. And what he's doing in Ukraine is an attempt to do that. And when Lithuania was the Grand Duchy of Europe, it encompassed Ukraine and Belarus both.
Mm.
So I think Lithuania feels almost a fatherly, protective spirit for
him. Right. Who got here first, right? let's see.
Another story.
Yes. I want to go back to Mary just briefly. Mary, I understand that you have visited a lot of museums, and we're coming down to sort of the end of our show, and I want to refocus on the museum. Mary, can you give us a few thoughts on how what's unique about this little museum in Chugiak versus what you might have seen in other museums around the world?
Well, I'm only talking about museums in the United States.
Okay.
But, I think, as far as I know, Svaya is the only individually motivated and, you know, constructed museum. And certainly the farthest north in the United States.
For sure.
the main Lithuanian museum is in Chicago, where, you know, where I grew up, the Balvikas Museum of Lithuanian Culture. And then there's also a Lithuanian Museum of Art in Lamont, which is a suburb of Chicago. There's a Lithuanian, what they call a classroom in the Cathedral of Learning in Pittsburgh, which is one room which is, it's a classroom, but it's set out as, a, you know, with Lithuanian paintings on the walls, carved furniture, everything is somehow connected to the culture. They have culture rooms throughout the Cathedral of Learning in Pittsburgh, and the Lithuanian room is amazing. And there's a Lithuanian Museum and Cultural Center in Prattville, Pennsylvania, which is a one-room but community effort. And there's a these are all places where many, many Lithuanians immigrated. Museum of Lithuanian Culture at the Baltimore Lithuanian Hall, which is in partnership with the oldest Lithuanian library in the United States. And that's the third floor of a large building, and it's quite an elaborate affair. And then there's a cultural garden, a Lithuanian cultural garden in Cleveland, full of sculptures of Lithuanian heroes.
Those are Svaya, go ahead, Mary.
Svaya, do you know about the Destination Lithuania America Interactive Web Map Project?
No, I don't think I do.
Maybe, Mary, we're running out of time, but maybe if you send me a link to that, I might add it to our webpage for the show.
Sure. And, and I'll talk to Svaya about getting this museum on that site.
That would be great. We're running out of time, and I want to return to Svaya just a little bit here to say, Svaya, how can people visit the museum? I believe it's by appointment. If you Google Little Lithuanian Museum, you're going to come to Svaya's website, right?
Yes, correct. And it's by appointment for your convenience and mine. It's no charge. It's a homespun place, but everything in it is representative of Lithuanian history and culture in some way, and including some family history, which is also representative of many, many people's experiences in Lithuania and not necessarily just my family. So I welcome you to visit me, and it's a pretty drive. And one visitor who was driving up who had been to Lithuania said, the drive reminds me of Lithuania.
That's great.
So you will get the full Lithuania experience.
And Svaya, I want to ask you what you would like to leave with our listeners. We talked about a lot of things, your family story, your country's story, the spirit of Lithuanian people, Mary weighed in on some of these aspects, this intense hanging on to democracy. Of all those things, you know, what would you like people to walk away from this show remembering?
Knowing where Lithuania is and that it is an independent, proud, democratic nation which is fully supporting Ukraine and freedom and democracy and is glad to be a part of the world order.
Wonderful, wonderful. As you can hear the music, we are running out of time. So I must say thank you so much to Svaya Worthington of the Little Lithuanian Museum and Library in Chugiak and to Mary Kancewick, a local poet of Lithuanian heritage who shared some of her thoughts. We will be back on Hometown Alaska next week. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Tobin Shelby was our audio engineer today. Thank you so much for joining us on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.